This is a perfect storm of conspiracy theories.
On December 15th, 2017, Canadian billionaires Honey and Barry Sherman were found dead in their mansion. To this day, the case remains unsolved.
Counterfeit and copied pharmaceuticals was much more lucrative than heroin, cocaine, and the rest of it.
If you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Listen to the no good, terribly kind, wonderful lives and tragic deaths of Barry and Honey Sherman, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast.
Mr. Speaker, I replace wacko with extremist. He is an
The honorable member to please. I'm going to ask the leader of the opposition once again to just withdraw that comment, please. And I'll invite the honorable member. I'm going to ask the honorable leader of the opposition to please withdraw that comment and simply withdraw that comment.
I'll replace it with radical Baptist policy.
I am not asking to replace. I'm asking the honorable member to just simply withdraw.
It's a scene from Tuesday's question period. The Speaker, Greg Fergus, gave Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre the boot for calling the Prime Minister a wacko. This came on the heels of a speech to the Canadian Police Association where Pierre Poilievre hinted at invoking the notwithstanding clause to pass laws cracking down on criminals. And last week, he made a visit to a convoy-style camp on the border of New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. So for more on what these moves could mean for Pierre Poilievre and for voters, we have convened our National Affairs panel. Catherine Cullen is the host of CBC Radio's The House. Stephanie Levitz is the Deputy Ottawa Bureau Chief of the Toronto Star. And Ryan Tumulty is a parliamentary reporter for the National Post. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Catherine, let's start with the Speaker, not just showing Pierre Poilievre of the door, but also Conservative MP Rachel Thomas just moments earlier. How rare is this for not just an MP to be sanctioned in this way, but also the leader of the opposition?
Even an MP being named, Matt, might be worthy of a headline. It happens, but not that frequently. The leader of a party having something like this happen, incredibly rare. The leader of the official opposition, according to the Library of Parliament, it has never happened. And, you know, I don't think we want to be too precious about question period. I think anyone who's tuned in has observed that sometimes the decorum is a little bit lacking, the quality of the debate, not always top notch. But things really got pretty rough the other day. And it wasn't just those comments by Pierre Poilievre. It really, like, from about the second question of the day, the tension was turned up. Poilievre was asking Trudeau about drug decriminalization. Trudeau sort of tried to turn things around and ask Poilievre to condemn extremists, white nationalists tied to that stop that he did make at that anti-carbon tax gathering. And you could see that that really set Poilievre off, right? That's when he starts talking about the Prime Minister spending half his life as a practicing racist, dressing up in hideous racist costumes so many times he can't remember. Trudeau says Poilievre is practicing shameful spineless leadership. And then this engagement about whether the Prime Minister's policies, as Mr. Poilievre said, not just the policies are wacko, but the Prime Minister himself.
Ryan, Pierre Poilievre leaves the House of Commons and almost immediately a fundraising email goes out to his supporters saying that he's being silenced. When you take a look at what unfolded, what sort of political points does this score with his supporters?
You know, I think for his supporters, this is proof that the system is bent against them, that everything has to change. Pierre Poilievre isn't asking for a win in the next election. He is asking for a landslide in the next election because he wants to overhaul everything, right? He wants to, as we're going to talk about later, he's going to want to push back on judges who may call his policies unconstitutional. He's going to want to push back definitely on the media. We know that, right? And so I think something like this, you know, I don't think Pierre Poilievre planned this, but I don't think he's sad that it happened either, because it does lean into that idea that it is Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives against the world trying to make Canada better.
Stephanie, it's interesting because yesterday there was a very different tone in the House of Commons, a bit like the morning after things get a bit rowdy one night. What do you make of that? And what do you make of what unfolded?
The tone, it must be said, the tone yesterday was almost akin to a mausoleum. I don't think the House of Commons has been that quiet in a question period, possibly since the cameras got turned on in that place. Maybe before it used to be like that, but not since. And it was interesting because, instead of the cut and thrust of question period, instead of the daily search for a viral video on the part of Mr. Polyev, he was measured, he was focused, he was disciplined. And it seemed to rattle the prime minister just as much as some of the heckling, right? So it's amazing what you can accomplish when you act like a grown-up. What I do think that, what we saw in the more raucous question period is something that people close to Mr. Polyev and even his supporters sometimes worry about with him. And that's that line between making a point and crossing a line. And when you double down and when you go too far, the theatrics are great. It might raise, tens of thousands of dollars for the party. But for the folks who are on the fence about Mr. Polyev, who are looking for like a certain je ne sais quoi kind of leadership vibe that is the grown-up in the room, those moments don't give it off. And neither do they for the prime minister, for that matter. I mean, he is not blameless in this scenario. Mm. Mr. Polyev just was the one who insulted him directly as opposed to insulting policies. Insulting policies, no problem. Insulting directly, problem. So the PM could have easily been the guy who crossed the line.
Ryan, does it matter that... Or is it significant that
those around Mr. Polyev? Go ahead.
Oh no, sorry. I was just going to say, Ryan, is it significant that the issue that ostensibly set this off was the issue of drug decriminalization in British Columbia, and what's happened there with the provincial government pulling back a little bit on decriminalization and looking for some cover and some support from the federal government? Does it matter that it's this issue in particular?
Well, I think sort of two things here. I think this is an issue which the Conservatives definitely feel passionately about. This isn't them putting on airs. They deeply believe that this policy that the government has pursued of allowing safe supply, for example, or safer supply, of allowing decriminalization in BC is a deeply flawed policy that is driving deaths. I will say that it yesterday, with that solemn quiet tone and question period, when you are talking about people who are dying at the rate of six people a day die in Canada from opioids, doing it in a calm and somber tone seems much better than doing it in a tone where you end up calling somebody a wacko. I think that issue definitely drives people's passions. Clearly on the conservative bench it does. And I think doing it in the tone that they did yesterday is probably, more fitting of the issue.
Catherine, as you mentioned, and as Stephanie was hinting at, the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, described Pierre Polyev as demonstrating shameful and spineless leadership. The Speaker did not boot the Prime Minister for that comment, although he did warn him. How much tolerance do you think voters have for that tone and that level of discourse that we're seeing in Parliament?
I think the fact that yesterday was such a sedate day suggests that both leaders understand that that is not what Canadians are looking for. And, they did really manage to get under each other's skin on Tuesday. I think, setting each other off with some of the things that perhaps the other is most sort of incensed about, Pierre Polyev feeling that the Prime Minister is a hypocrite and an extremist. And Justin Trudeau, there's so much discussion about why is he choosing to continue this fight when the poll numbers are low. I think it's important to be said, right in the seat of his soul, Justin Trudeau really does look at things like Pierre Polyev stopping at that anti-carbon tax protest and say, this is a guy, in his view, who flirts with extremists. And that is, why he's taking this country in a dangerous direction. That said, pardon me. That level of discourse, I think it's clear they both understand that this is not what Canadians want day in and day out from their leaders. They were better behaved yesterday. I do think that we could find ourselves here again. It doesn't necessarily bode terribly well for the next election when, tempers are really, passions are particularly high.
It's interesting, Steph, that yesterday we saw a Liberal MP, Pam Damoff, saying that she's not going to run in the next federal election. She says the current tone of politics is being driven by a need for social media likes, a change in how politicians interact with the public. And she said the tenor of the political discourse has deteriorated significantly. She worries about her own public safety as well. What do you make of that?
I mean, for one, talk about timing, right? It's not as though MP Damoff's decision was made as a result of what happened in the House of Commons. It was some time coming, but what better a way to sort of juxtapose, what's going on? I think a lot of MPs are feeling very unsettled right now about the political climate. The extent to which, people are showing up at their homes and offices, sometime in dangerous situations. Some members of parliament have had to have round-the-clock security because of threats against their lives. So the environment is certainly changing for them. There is a risk that, you know, people like.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Pam Damoff are turned off by politics and don't want to run. And what does that do then to our public discourse? If we have a House of Commons filled with, you know, well over 300 people that are only in it for the lulz, to borrow an expression, what does that do for democracy, public policy, and the future of our country?
I mentioned earlier that Pierre Polyev gave a speech on Monday. It's been getting all sorts of attention. Here's a bit of that speech.
Multiple murderers will stay in maximum security. And by the way, they will have consecutive, not concurrent sentences. Multiple murderers will only ever come out of jail in a box.
Stephanie, start us off here on this issue. Walk us through what exactly Pierre Polyev is hinting at and how realistic something like that is. I mean, what is he doing in that speech?
So what he's doing is putting another line into his tough on crime agenda by rehashing something that he promised during the 2022 leadership race, which is effectively to use the notwithstanding clause to change the sentencing regimes for multiple murderers. And this is significant insofar as it would basically erode the rights of an accused killer or someone who's convicted of multiple murders. And raising a lot of questions, I think, in people's minds about, okay, well, if he's going to use, you know, this sort of political third rail in the Constitution on this, what else might he want to use it for?
Ryan, are we learning more about what Pierre Polyev, for much of his time as leader, I mean, that's what an opposition leader does, is criticize what the government is doing. But are we learning more about what he might do as prime minister?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see a window into that. You know, he's been talking to more groups. I think he quite rightly feels much more confident in his position. You know, he when you have a 21-point lead in the polls, it's easier to go out there and tell Canada what you're going to do. And I think he's going to become under more and more pressure the closer we get to an election to do that. You know, it is the job of an opposition leader to oppose and to say what the government is doing wrong. But he is a prime minister in waiting now. That's the move that he is moving into. And so he's got to start saying what he would do, not just what he wouldn't do.
Catherine, conservatives will often talk about being tougher on crime than their opponents. How do you think Pierre Polyev using that messaging to help garner support? Is it going to stick, do you think?
Well, it's interesting because that speech that he gave, Matt, it's not just the idea that he would use the notwithstanding clause in this one particular instance, but he seemed to be suggesting the Canadian Police Association. And, you know, he didn't actually even say the phrase notwithstanding clause. So we are doing a bit of reading in here that he might be ready to use it multiple times. And so, in fact, I was part of a group of journalists that went to go see him at a speech the next day to say, listen, what are we really talking about here? How widespread is this use going to be? And more than that, what does it tell us about your view of the courts? You know, a federal government has never invoked the notwithstanding clause. I think these are really interesting questions about how Pierre Polyev is going to attack all of this, what his bigger vision is for justice. He didn't really want to engage too much on sort of what the bigger vision is and how big he wants to go. He did talk very specifically about that idea of concurrent versus consecutive sentencing. So, you know, you're not going to come out of jail unless it's in a box if you're a multiple murderer.
He used the phrase my laws as well, did he not?
Well, I asked him, what does this say? Because he was sort of saying Justin Trudeau's comfortable with this. And I said, well, sir, it's the courts that decided this about consecutive versus concurrent sentencing. What does it say about your view of the courts? And he said, it says that my view is that I will decide in my platform. So watch this space. I will say the conservatives are making a gamble here that, you know, the average Canadian probably doesn't even know what the notwithstanding clause is, but they know that somebody who commits a truly odious crime, you know, ought to receive very severe punishment for it. And I think they're betting that Canadians will more viscerally feel their anger towards those crimes. And we should say, you know, that they're also talking about changes to bail. So this isn't just people who are convicted criminals, but also people who are accused. That Canadians are going to be more concerned about the crime than they are about, you know, the sort of constitutional specifics here. But it's clear that there is going to be some pushback if they do choose to go down that road.
The events of this week followed, as we mentioned, videos that were shared last week of Pierre Poilievre at a roadside encampment in the Maritimes talking with protesters. They're protesting the carbon tax, among other issues. Here's a little bit of that.
So I'm the guy who's going to axe the tax.
Well, let's hope so.
Well, don't hope so. Make it so.
That's
make
why we're
so.
Here.
I know you are.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's happy with what you're doing.
Really?
Fighting
that's
against
awesome to hear.
Tax. Everyone hates the tax.
Yeah.
Because everyone's been screwed over, right?
Oh,
people believed his lies. Everything he said was bullshit.
Speaking of strong language, Ryan, what's the political gain in this? He called it an unplanned pit stop, but he didn't have to stop. What do you make of that?
You know, I think he looks for people that he views as his supporters. I think he likes being around supporters. He doesn't wade into a lot of crowds that dislike him. And I mean, that's not unusual as a politician. I think, you know, once he sees a few F. Trudeau flags, he's pretty sure he's going to be going to a receptive crowd. You know, and I think the other part of, you know, Pierre Poilievre's success in the last year has, you know, he's taken a lot of votes away from the Liberals, but he has also made it so that you do not hear about the People's Party of Canada anymore. They have been, you know, reduced to, you know, 2% or less in the polls. And people on the far right used to be PPC supporters. And so when you talk to conservatives about the successes Poilievre has had, you know, crushing the PPC is one of them. And so I think, you know, talking to a group of what I'm sure he knew, you know, when he pulled over were going to be voters on his pretty far right. I think he knew that. I don't think he, you know, necessarily saw the small Diagonal flag painted on the side of a van. But I think he knew he was going to a receptive crowd and a crowd that he needs to keep.
Stephanie, the Diagonal flag is getting a lot of attention. It's not just the F. Trudeau flags. Diagonal, the RCMP says, is a far-right militia-like group. What do you think the message is in Pierre Poilievre stopping there? But also, is there a risk in that stop?
I pick up on what Ryan says. Did he see the flag? Didn't he see the flag? You know, is this a situation like they used to say about Twitter? You know, retweets do not equal endorsements when in fact they do. that you can't just, you know, you're automatically seen as being aligned with something just because you walk past it. I'm not sure that that's where we are in our political discourse. I think there's a risk, though. And the risk is in saying, I didn't know. Because there have been members of parliament in his own caucus who have taken meetings with people who have questionable views. They have claimed they didn't know. They were punished by, you know, in some way reprimanded, made to say they were sorry by Mr. Poilievre and his circle. He goes ahead and does this and does not apologize. And I bring that up only because, you know, Mr. Poilievre is riding so high in the polls right now that there are two possible things that could happen. He gets even more disciplined, and so does caucus, or they all get cocky and they lose it. They don't want that cocky part. They need the discipline part. And so if the boss is the guy sort of making these questionable stops that sort of re-raise this issue as the Liberals do, oh, you're just a bunch of crazy white extremists, you know, the members of the caucus are like, well, how come he doesn't have to apologize and I have to apologize? I don't understand. The fish rots from the head, Matt. Mr. Poilievre is at the head. The party doesn't have room for rot.
Catherine, what have we learned just finally in the last couple of minutes that we have? What have we learned, do you think, about the conservatives, the leader of the opposition, and what they may or may not be steering toward as we may get closer in the next few months to an election?
I mean, I think an important question for the conservatives is going to be the one that Stephanie just raised. They are high in the polls. What are the lessons of the things that have happened in the last few days? And, you know, there's sort of a disparate group of events that we're talking about here, from the stop to the behavior in the House of Commons to his views on crime and where he plans to take the criminal justice system, to what end he's to when it, degree he's willing to upend the norms. What lessons can you tease out of all of this? I mean, right now it looks like his poll numbers are only going up and that there hasn't been a negative effect to this. At the same time, I think that stop, you know, Stephanie talks about Pierre Poilievre and discipline. He's an incredibly disciplined politician. Anyone who has listened to the number of times he has repeated the words axe the tax, right? I mean, his whole raison d'etre is this political discipline, laser focus on cost of living, not being distracted by other issues. That stop was, I think, a good example of actually getting distracted and risking letting your message get diluted and raising the kinds of questions that are going to make a significant number of Canadian voters uncomfortable who might otherwise be willing to consider him. So I think the big question is going to be, how many more conversations like this are we going to have, or is Mr. Poilievre going to maintain that sort of laser focus on the issues that everyone can agree on, and how much are some of those policies, you know, he said, it's going to be in my platform when it comes to the justice issues. Well, we're 18 months out now. Perhaps that's early for him to have a platform, but those questions are going to continue. And at some point, we presume he's going to start filling in a little bit more policy there.
Thank you all. Great to have you back this morning.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Catherine Cullen, host of CBC Radio's The House, Stephanie Levitz, Deputy Ottawa Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star, and Ryan Tumulty, Parliamentary Reporter for the National Post. That's our National Affairs panel.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.